Roguecast is the official podcast of Rogues Gallery Comics and Games. Every week we talk about new comic releases, store news, and whatever games, movies, and TV is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
This is Dave.
I'm Nick.
And now, on with the show.
Welcome to Roguecast, episode 251, a bold new era.
Oh, is it? Are we launching into a new era?
Sure.
New costumes.
Yeah, new costumes.
Extreme attitudes.
Nick's a mutant now.
Man.
Yeah, it's fine.
Dave's telepath. My powers have changed.
You know, one of my almost picks this week was Invaders, where they have Namor as that guy who's like, is he just a weird Atlantean or is he an actual mutant? I've never been a big fan of the actual mutant thing.
Yeah. I didn't like when they did Namor. I didn't like it when they did the Cloak and Dagger. I don't make people mutants.
Yeah, Cloak and Dagger have drug powers.
Yeah, they have drug powers.
I think they were a little ashamed of the drug powers.
I think they were too, but that's
what you embrace.
Yeah, yeah. Take out their powers.
Embrace the drug powers.
They didn't do drugs. They
right.
Were
it's not like
the drugs.
They're like she shoots out ecstasy or whatever.
Although that'd be a good power.
And Cloak, it'd be cool if he opened his cloak and like syringes just flew out by the hundreds. Yeah.
That seems or like if, a very 90s thing.
Or if people went into the cloak and it was like they were on meth and they came out all shivering.
Yeah. Where's my teeth? This is off to a dark start.
A little bit.
It is a new and edgy era.
Wow. We've revamped Cloak and Dagger
as like
the worst possible.
Immediately apologize to everyone. Begin this podcast with an apology.
251, we looked up, see some of the some of the notable issues were in this era. I believe 251 in the Marvel era, this is where all of us were reading stuff.
Yeah. Early, mid-80s, whatever.
So Fantastic Four 251 is the End of the Negative Zone by John Byrne.
Right, that was for those who don't know, at a time when comics were not doing very long-form stories, this had a bunch of short stories, essentially, but it was like a whole year of Reed saying to the family, hey, let's go explore the Negative Zone. And so each issue they would encounter some new planet or alien race or spaceship or whatever, very much in the tradition of kind of classic Star Trek. What else we got?
Amazing Spider-Man is it's another Roger Stern era. And Tom DeFalco, I think this might have been when the switch happened.
Oh.
It is called Endings, and is the one where Spider-Man is holding Hobgoblin's mask aloft in the East River.
Right. They fought on the battle van.
Yep.
And crashed into the river, and I think it ended with him not knowing if Hobgoblin was dead or not. In a classic tradition.
Spoiler, he wasn't.
I remember a cool scene in there where Spider-Man's on the front of the van and he's like trying to break through the glass and Hobgoblin's laughing at him because it's like some super reinforced thing and there's just no way even with his strength he could get through it, and Spider-Man starts to start up and he gets through it and it's cool.
And then X-Men 251 has the famous cover that Mark Silvestri drew of Wolverine on the X-Cross.
It's a dark story.
It is.
And with the that whole
I don't know that. So that was actually post my era. I had stopped reading.
That whole run was sort of the Reavers versus the X-Men in the Outback, and it's
were the Reavers just like being like brutal in that way that
yeah.
I think of as some of the
yep.
like the Marauders
well,
were
like tortured.
It was
Psylocke.
Yeah, it was Donald Pierce was doing it because Donald Pierce, you know, he had that whole grudge against Wolverine because he cut off his arms and made him a cyborg.
Yep.
Why would you have a grudge about that? Give the arms, give the robot arms a chance, Pierce.
No, but it's dark and
yeah.
They do some pretty horrific things.
And then
okay.
Yeah, Jubilee goes and frees him from his X-shaped crucifix.
I do believe that every once in a while, Claremont, for all that I love him, was a bit from the school of let's make the female character more interesting by torturing her or having her raped.
Definitely was doing that. Yeah.
Carol Danvers would be a prime example of that.
Oh, yeah, man, I forgot that was him.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so store news stuff. First of all, a big announcement that we've been wanting to make, but we are going to be at Greater Austin Comic Con, as we mentioned.
Yep.
We are going to be sponsoring Larry Hama, which
Yay.
Is kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
Because, of course, we all came into comics through G.I. Joe.
Yeah.
So we will be hosting a booth, like, right near Larry's. And you know, we're actually going to be doing a limited cover.
Yeah.
That's going to be Vo, the guy who runs Greater Austin Comic Con, is just finishing up. It's a cool like Snake Eyes with American flag. It's going to be a cool variant cover that's you can get signed at the show. I heard rumors that Ray Park might be there to sign things.
Oh man, that's good. That's awesome.
Cool. So yeah, so we're really excited about that.
You know, in the era we were just talking about, one of the sort of golden ages of Marvel with Shooter presiding over it, even though a lot of creators bristled under it, it was a powerful creative era.
Yeah.
That G.I. Joe was coming out at that time, too, And I think I've said this before. I don't know if its highest highs quite match the highest highs of what was going on in Daredevil or something
right,
like that.
Sure.
But it's middle of the solid middle of the road issues were, I think, like as good as anything else Marvel was putting out at the time.
I agree.
Really and good. Even to me, still hold up. Obviously, they're dated in the sense of being from the 80s, but not dated in the sense of being bad right. by any means.
No. Yeah. Also, we are still selling tickets. They're $30, and that'll be till the end of April.
That's $30 you get Saturday, Sunday.
Yep. And you get as many free kids passes as you want. So the kids pass are for ages 6 to 12, and as long as you have an adult badge, you can get kids in.
Yeah, to bring your little brood.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
But
that is awesome.
But do not bring two kids in a trench coat, because they will have to get an adult ticket.
What if you bring the actual brood? Is that a bad thing?
The brood are not covered under their... No, there are no brood passes.
What about Brickbat only for
brick
the brood?
Brickbat only, yes.
One Brickbat only.
A reference only the three of us in this room understand.
Yes.
Possible Russell.
Yeah. Russell, you want to email us, I know who Brickbat is.
That's a kind of a deep cut.
If you want to email us, I don't know who Brickbat is, that is also good. Now I'm curious. All right. Also coming up in, I guess, next week? It is next week. We're doing the Beer and Board Games at Easy Tiger at the Link again. That is April 16th. That is the day before my birthday. And I am bringing a present for everyone. I am bringing a copy of Splendor to give away. So people win a drawing to win a copy of Splendor, which is an awesome board game.
Oh, nice.
That's an amazing board game.
So so come out and play board games with us and drink and eat Easy Tiger's awesome food. We got a tour last time, and they are having a new menu coming up, and their stuff is amazing. So
the tour was awesome, and we managed to sneak in a few samples, I believe. Y'all probably did, too.
Yep.
Just, like, the pickles alone.
The tarragon pickles are amazing.
Were freaking amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Then, of course, the Magic the Gathering War of the Spark pre-release is happening Saturday, April 27th and Sunday, April 28th. I believe we still have spots on those.
Yep. Filling up a bit they Sunday in the earlier one, but there's still spots for sure.
Free comic book day the weekend after that, Saturday, May 4th. We just got our free comics, so we'll probably be talking about those in a couple of weeks on the podcast.
Yep.
Then on May 15th, on Wednesday, May 15th, starting at 10 a.m. until about 12:30, we're going to have a signing with artist Sam Lotfi, who is... doing a book called Last Stop on the Red Line. That's like a murder mystery out of Dark Horse. He'll be here signing books. Then coming up, International Tabletop Day, Modern Horizons pre-release, Free RPG Day, Comic-Con, all kinds of stuff.
Oh my God.
It's busy.
We should have saved that for our 250th episode.
Well, we'll save it for our 300th.
Yeah, none of this stuff is happening now.
I'm not sure how that
Let's put it off until until 300.
Yeah, you'll know when the fireworks happen that it's all starting.
300 is the McFarlane Spider-Man Venom.
It is
creation
it
issue.
Is, yeah. All right. By the way, I don't know if you guys actually got a chance to listen last week, but I did when I edited it. The other staffers, all the women who work here,
Anna, Julie, and Kate.
They did a bonus podcast.
I was listening to it just last night.
And I think they did a great job.
Yeah.
I really liked what they had to say about Doom Patrol and Captain Marvel and stuff that, from an angle that I don't think we would have done.
Right. They came out swinging, too, and were very witty.
Yeah.
And informed.
And I think, I'm hoping they're talking about possibly doing it again, like, once a month. We'll see how that works out.
I think, I'm hoping that we can make it happen. I was really impressed.
I'm going to listen to it, but what is their closer? What did they decide on?
They went with Battle on Xena.
Oh, okay. Nice. I like it.
All right. Not much news this week.
You know what? You know the Flash Gordon movie from the 80s?
Yes.
Guy who tries to kill Ming and he gets frozen in place and then Ming makes him stab himself or something like that.
I haven't seen
right before years. He shuts... You've seen Flash Gordon.
Yeah, but it's years and years.
He shouts out death to Ming.
Uh-huh.
Because he's like a little... He's trying to do an uprising. It doesn't work there.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel that would be a good closer too. I just want to point out death to Ming.
You want to change Yo-Jo now?
Let's workshop it. Let's workshop it. That movie is extremely quotable.
Only if you can bring Max Van Sydow in to say it.
Is he still alive?
Yeah, he is.
Man, that guy. Last I knew, he was in Force
Awakens. That's a lot of makeup. It's always makeup. He never looks.
I know. That's as we've talked about. I think at some point in the past. In Exorcist, he was like 40 or 42 or something like that. But playing a dude who looked like he was 70.
Yeah,
yeah.
Who runs Bartertown would also be a good closer.
Oh yeah.
And possibly got to catch them all.
Yes. But if you have any suggestions of catchlines from movies, not that we're going to change it up, especially right as we're bringing in Larry Hama, no. The most awesome dude ever.
Yeah.
But if you got some, send them our way.
Yep. Make mine Marvel. All right. Not a lot of news this week, but some interesting news. First of all, the big one, of course, is the Joker trailer went live.
Right.
Is anyone here enthusiastic about this movie? Nick?
Nope.
Okay, well, this is going to be rough. If you're looking forward to the Joker movie, you probably want to skip ahead about 5 minutes, because we're just going to complain about it.
You know what? Here's the thing. I'm not just going to complain. I thought it was a competent and interesting-looking trailer for like some kind of weird art house movie. I think if it had come out some other time in the past, I might have been at least more interested in it.
Yeah.
As it is, I'm more in the place of somebody, when I was posting about it on Facebook and was just kind of weirded out by how... just off-brand it is.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, like, with Shazam and Aquaman and Wonder Woman, they've kind of made this move towards kind of more upbeat, I don't want to say family-friendly films, but more family-friendly films.
Yeah.
And this one looks to be a morally ambiguous, weird, psychological deep cut on the Joker, inspired by Scorsese and the King of Comedy and his 70s design sense. The guy in the thread posted and said, I'm just tired of Joker. He's like, I've just seen so much Joker. No more Joker.
I think that's where my head is at, too.
Yeah.
It's not... Yeah, you're right. This is not a bad trailer. It's a good trailer for a movie that I have no desire to see.
Right. And also, like, I kind of wanted to see... This was just a random thought that I had while I was watching it, is that... And maybe we'll see more when subsequent trailers come out. I kind of would have liked one of those trailers that just shows a scene from it. Just like 2 minutes of a raw scene, maybe mildly edited, where you can kind of see some intense scene. You know, it's the way Shyamalan did some of my favorite trailers for him, for like Sixth Sense and Unbreakable.
Yeah.
Where he just showed a slightly edited down scene, and it would just be one of those scenes that was kind of riveting.
Yeah.
I would love to have seen something like that. That would have been more likely to get me on board.
What if there are no scenes like that in this movie?
Yeah, it's just... Yeah.
I'm having a really hard time imagining the Joker as a protagonist.
Well, the comparisons I've heard from people
is Taxi Driver,
and you know, the notion of, oh well, you don't have to have a protagonist. You actually was actually a good guy. You could be someone watching someone damaged. And I'm like,
sure. This is true in many movies.
Yes.
Oh man, hey, I love Wolf of Wall Street. And that guy's a total scumbag.
Right.
Oh.
But it's sort of fun, and it does hit its comeuppance, and I'm like. I don't want to see the Joker. Well, I don't want to see the backstory.
The Joker, just to go a little meta, and I think there's almost no way to do that. He has a history that goes back like eight decades or something. Like, what is it? Is it really 80 years?
It is 80 years.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Close to it,
yeah. And people know he's a villain. He's also a villain that people kind of have love as an anti-hero.
Yeah.
They have on T-shirts. He inspired the Aurora shooting in Colorado.
Yeah.
There's a lot of crazy baggage associated with him. The guy who played him in a movie killed himself.
Yeah.
And
the other guy who played him is just insane.
Yes. So it's weird to... It is weird to go back to the Joker as somebody you want to take a deep dive into.
Yeah.
Jack Nicholson always said, like, you know, I think he even, like, warned Jack Nicholson.
Yeah, it was so weird.
He's like, once you get in that headspace, it's, like, really hard to get out of it. And I'm like...
It's hard for me to believe that.
That was a weird thing. It's not like Jack Nicholson was on the darkest headspace in the world when he played Joker. He was goofy as hell.
Right.
Come on.
I'm glad he's dead. Yeah, I don't know.
This
is from the director of all three Hangover movies, who also was one of the writers on it.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people are pinning hopes on the fact that it's Scorsese is like executive producer or something like that.
Right, yeah.
Clearly it was inspired by his movies.
Sure,
there's no doubt about it.
Maybe De Niro's yelling at the director. He's like, no, you do it this way.
You mean Scorsese? Or do you think Robert De Niro follows him around?
Well, no, Robert De Niro is in the movie.
He is?
Yeah.
Oh, weird.
That is weird. I heard him talk about it, but I thought it was one of those, like, oh, at one point they were talking about having me in this movie, but
from what I understand, he's in the movie.
Okay.
That is odd.
I don't know. This could be one of those things where, I mean, it could be in October when this comes out. We'll be eating our words, like, wow, that was really great. I can't believe it. We're so unexcited. I think more likely it's going to be, wow, that was a train wreck.
There have been plenty of times where I've seen a trailer and I'm like, well, I have no interest. And then when it comes out, I'll see it and I'm like, oh, okay.
A second trailer could have like really interesting scenes. I will say this: I expect Joaquin Phoenix.
Joaquin Phoenix.
That he is. I think he's going to be great. I think he's going to be super intense and interesting.
Yeah.
But here's the other thing: I saw a Joker as failed comedian story in 1987 when Alan Moore wrote The Killing Joke.
Right.
I didn't clamor for more because he told that story about as interestingly and morally ambiguously as you could.
Right.
I don't think that they are going to be better storytellers about it than Alan Moore was. And even though, I do agree that's kind of a flawed story, it's still super compelling and fascinating. Every page is interesting in it.
Dave, are you saying that the guy who made all three Hangover movies is not a better writer than Alan Moore?
I know I'm going out on a limb here, and I know I'm going to be the only guy in the room saying it, but...
So, I would like, while we're throwing in unpopular opinions, I don't love Joaquin Phoenix.
No?
I like him fine, but as I look through his list of stuff, there's nothing he's been in where I'm like, oh yeah, he's so great in that. Like, I saw Walk the Line, I saw The Village, I saw Gladiator.
Well, you know, Gladiator, he was a somewhat, I don't want to say generic villain, but he was very oily.
Like,
I actually think of things like...
I saw Her.
I liked him in both Shyamalan movies quite a bit.
Yeah, I liked him in Signs.
Signs, I thought he was particularly good.
I like him. I don't think he's a bad actor. But
I think he's a guy who can
bring... One of our greatest living actors, and I'm like, really?
Well, I haven't seen that much of his stuff. I feel like actually probably if I had seen more, I'd probably be more impressed. I think he's a guy a little bit like... who's the guy in... who's the lead, the protagonist in No Country for Old Men? Who's that actor?
Oh,
Javier Bardem?
No, the protagonist.
Oh, man.
From Goonies.
Yes. The guy who was... He's Thanos, right?
Yeah,
Thanos. Josh Brolin.
Josh Brolin. Josh Brolin is a guy who's been done many movies where he's just a perfectly average, solid actor.
Yeah.
But he can, with the right script, become amazing. And I think Phoenix is kind of one of those people too.
Okay. I've never seen him anything where I was like, oh, wow, that guy that was so good.
Yeah. I think he's got it. I think he's got it in him. But yeah, like this movie will have to get like rave reviews or a trailer that like somehow really catches on to me for me to even. Really consider seeing
it.
I was
right. Robert De Niro is in it. Zazie Beetz is in it.
Zazie Beetz is what makes me want to see it. I like her.
A couple of like small bit actors that I actually have a lot of fondness for, like Brett Cullen and Francis Conroy.
Oh yeah.
Francis
Conroy playing his mom.
I think so.
It's a weird thing that the Joker having a mom.
And then Shea Whigham is in it. Which
I
like Shea Whigham a lot.
That guy's good. He's one of those that guys.
He is.
I guess we shall see.
We shall see. Moving on to another DC movie. They announced that Idris Elba is, in fact, not playing Deadshot.
No.
Did you see this? I think it's a change.
I don't know.
He's not playing Deadshot. They're going to recast him as a different character, which has got to be Bronze Tiger.
Oh, man, that would be cool.
Huh. If they do Bronze Tiger, it would be amazing.
Bronze Tiger, traditionally, I think of as a guy who's probably about 30 and is like, you know, Bruce Lee, the black Bruce Lee.
I always think of him as an older guy.
Really?
Yeah.
I've never thought of him that way. Maybe... I'm going to say 35 tops.
Hmm. I just thought of him because he's got a big lion head on his head. Or a tiger head on his head.
It's right there in the name,
yeah,
Nick.
I know, right
now. the Bronze Liger. anyway, I of course, as a fan of John Ostrander's Suicide Squad run, especially, I love Bronze Tiger.
I'm just guessing, by the way. They haven't announced who the character
and actually, like I think this is one of those characters where... Like, Idris Elba is not, like, some ailing old man.
No.
He's just a little older than I would have thought of him. I think that would actually be perfectly cool, too.
Yeah. Now, they may be doing something weird where he's like, he's going to be Captain Cold.
Right.
I don't know, but Bronze Tiger would be the badass one.
Yeah, that would be cool.
But the interesting thing is that that means that if they want to bring Will Smith back for a 3, if it succeeds and Gunn does another one, then they could do that. They could have both of them. So
maybe he's playing
cool.
The Enchantress. I can see, like, there's other people that you could potentially cast him as. Like, almost any given villain could be him.
Yeah.
He could be Slipknot. He could be... Slipknot get killed in the first one?
He did.
All right. But hypothetically, he could have been Slipknot.
Slipknot 2.
Yeah.
I guess James Gunn posted something on his Instagram that... basically a picture of Bronze Tiger.
Oh,
so
that more or less confirms it?
Gotta be it.
Yeah.
Which is...
He was the notably absent one from Ostrander's Suicide Squad run in the previous movie.
Yeah.
So that'd be pretty cool.
That'd
I'm down
great.
For it.
Yeah.
So apparently, this is just from another site, but comicbook.com saying that I guess he's going on record as saying that the John Ostrander run is his inspiration for his Suicide Squad.
Oh, that makes me so happy.
James Gunn
yeah.
said that? Nice.
Man.
It's hard. Like, I'm sure that they... thought it was in the previous one. Like, yeah. They clearly, like, it was like they looked at his ingredients list, yeah. but not what he baked with it. And they're like, well, how do these go together?
Yeah.
I'm going to run with that metaphor.
I like it.
Because they did also announce that, what's her name, is still coming back as Amanda Waller, which I actually
Viola
think
Davis, yeah.
sure,
Viola Davis is great.
A yeah. lot of the people they had in there could have been good in a better movie.
Yeah.
Yes.
David,
and again, I say this as someone who kind of liked it.
Yeah, I kind of liked it.
To
too.
Follow through on your analogy,
yes.
they made a shit cupcake.
Yes, that's right.
I did not like that movie. But as we know, I'm harsher on DC movies yep. than you guys.
But yeah, also that's a good sign.
Yeah.
James Gunn going out of his way to mention the
yeah.
Ostrander run is awesome. I hope all the best things for Ostrander once again. It'd be nice for him to be associated with a movie that's just a little bit better.
Netflix has announced their live casting for Cowboy Bebop, which is going to be the original creator's consultant on the show. And it is going to feature John Cho in the lead role of Spike Spiegel.
Yep. It's been interesting to watch people react to this. I've seen love it, and I've seen hate it, and
yeah.
I've seen in between, I think.
I'm in between.
I have not seen the show. So, but at a quick glance with the photos, and I've seen bits and pieces
yeah.
of it. I kind of like it.
I do too. I have seen the show multiple times. It's probably one of my favorite animes.
It's only the kind of the age difference again in this one to bring up age once
that's
again.
That thing's gonna be a little strange. Is that John Cho is in his 40s?
Yeah,
and Spike
like,
is more of in his 20s.
Yeah,
but there's nothing wrong with doing an older Spike, and John Cho is great. So
right. I think he has a kind of youthful look to him,
yeah.
so I think that won't be too hard to sell. I saw a picture of whoever is playing. What's the
Faye Valentine is being played by Daniel Pineda from Jurassic World: Fallen Kingdom, which I
yep.
have not seen. Nick, who is this person?
She's like playing not a veterinarian, but she was the one who sort of knew dinosaur. Biology.
Okay. I saw a picture, and I was like, visually, this person looks good. I wouldn't say someone who was in Jurassic Park Fallen Kingdom is necessarily who you want to cast anywhere, but...
Bryce Dallas Howard.
But there's also...
Actress.
Right. There's nothing... Nobody was at their best in that movie, I guess is what I would say, and so I cannot judge new actors from it.
That's fair.
Bryce Dallas Howard has a stronger track record in superior movies.
And then Jet Black is being played by Mustafa Shakir, who is from Luke Cage, and I believe played Diamondback?
Or Diamond.
Yeah.
Or
Cottonmouth is Mahershala Ali.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
He played Diamondback. But that's cool. And then I it says the villain Vicious is Alex Hassell. I don't know this. I've not watched enough of Cowboy Bebop to remember who all these characters are.
Didn't they also do a movie?
They did. Vicious is Spike's friend turned like most hated adversary. So yeah.
Spoiler warning.
Exactly. all I want to know is if Ayn is going to be a real
CGI
corgi
or a
CGI.
In this day and age, they should use real corgi, maybe with a bit of CG to tweak it as needed to make
yeah.
sure the dog does what they want it to
and
do.
And right. I want to know who is going to play Ed.
Yeah.
Ed's a pretty pivotal
character. Yeah, yeah, I agree.
When did that come out, that anime? Mid-90s?
Or early
90s,
I don't know.
Maybe
yeah.
somewhere in that ballpark.
Okay.
I'm for this. I really want this to be good.
Me
and
too.
This is a really good cast.
Yeah.
Who's? I'm sorry, I missed. Is this a movie or is this Netflix?
It's a Netflix 10-episode show.
Okay. Boy, but that Netflix, they better get this one right.
Right.
People
yeah.
will sharpen the knives are already sharpened. I
yeah,
guess I should
yeah.
say
after
yeah.
death.
The pitchforks are ready. The torches are being set at the base of the windmill.
Yep.
They the cancer causing windmill. they better get out quick.
Yep. Yep.
Okay.
All right. Finally, Zack Snyder is returning to zombies.
Right.
So Snyder
famously the one. I know, you know there's some fondness for 300. Some people like Watchmen. I kind of like Watchmen. But the one movie that I definitely will always give him is Dawn of the Dead.
Yep. So he had a sequel that he was working on, but they scrubbed it in 2012. This is not a sequel. It's called Army of the Dead.
Oh, it's not a sequel?
It's not a sequel. It's a set following a zombie outbreak in Las Vegas, and a group of mercenaries take the ultimate gamble, venturing into the quarantine zone to pull off the greatest heist ever attempted. Those soldiers will be led by Dave Bautista. It's a good pitch.
Yeah, that's all right. If it's a zombie apocalypse world, then I'd be like, are they going to get the money and be like, oh, nobody cares about money anymore?
I think it's not. It sounds like maybe they've got them quarantined in Vegas.
Oh, I see. Sure. I like this potentially a little bit better because it won't infringe on the other one, like if it stinks, which right. probably would.
It probably will because James Gunn hasn't written the script.
Right. I didn't even remember that until a few weeks ago. Yeah. Somebody reminded me of that
I was... I did not realize that James Gunn wrote the script.
Yeah. It makes so much more sense as to like why it came off so well.
Yeah. Because you're like, well, they had all the ingredients to make a shit cupcake, and somehow they made a delicious cupcake.
Yes,
and it was because James Gunn provided the frosting.
Right, but also there was a
that's a bad analogy because the cupcake would still be shit; it just had frosting on it. It was delicious.
They also had a talented cast for once in Zack Snyder's life. The music choices, I feel, are fairly inspired.
They're not on the nose.
They are a little bit, but that was the first time I'd heard that Johnny Cash song, which has since been used a number of times in other projects. Yeah. The Richard Cheese cover of the song from, what, Disturbed or something like that was a great and super inspired choice.
Yep.
I feel like there's at least one or two other ones
in
there.
Is it possible that those are just decisions by James Gunn?
Yeah, like, if it noted that in the script, I would not be bit shocked.
Yeah, Gunn is a guy who does music with his stuff. It could entirely have been.
Because I'm looking at it,
he does do music.
Zack Snyder wrote a lot of all the dialogue for all his other movies, and I'm like, ooh, that was really bad.
Yeah, it could be, in fact, this because Zack Snyder was a new director at this point, that Gunn's script is what held sway.
Interesting, interesting. I might actually have to, if nothing else, there's all these scripts are always available online, and I think that would actually be an interesting read. I might try and dig up the Dawn of the Dead remake script.
Because that had a great cast.
Yeah.
I mean,
anyway, I'm just glad that Zack Snyder's got going back to superheroes. Go do zombies. Go do something else.
You know, here's the thing.
Do Sucker Punch 2.
Certainly, like, the guy has had a rough go of things.
Yes.
So on a human level, I got to acknowledge that.
Yes.
I would like for him to make a cool zombie movie. If he does, I like zombies. I will get behind this movie, and it's not going to make me like his other stuff better. But I would probably be, I'll get back on board him as a guy who I can occasionally watch a movie for.
I feel like he understands the undead more than he understands superheroes.
I agree, and he's not.
He understands dead people more than humans.
Yes, he's not going to become any less of a bro-y Ayn Randian douchebag. So
yeah, that's probably true.
All right, we'll be back in just a second to talk comics for the week.
One familiar cry. Rogue-cast.
Rogue-cast. We're talking comics for the week of Wednesday, April 10th, and there's a bunch of stuff this week. I think we found somewhat slim pickings, but there was some interesting stuff to read.
Yeah.
I think the problem was there wasn't a lot of new stuff to talk about, which is always makes it a challenging week.
Yeah, it was a little weird because last week was the fifth week too, and this week, I actually got. A few of my regulars hit this week, and like one of them, Invaders, as previously mentioned, I'm a little on the fence on now because I knew that he had to bring it home with the finale. I needed him to get Xavier right and stuff like that, and I don't think he quite did, and it frustrates me a little bit. But I'll talk about that when we talk about our smaller picks because it still had a lot of good stuff in it.
Yeah. Nick, why don't you start us?
Sure. I actually did find a number one to talk about, and that is War of the Realms, Journey into Mystery. Apparently, this is from the writers of a podcast called Adventure Zone.
Yeah.
So this is
which apparently the youths enjoy.
Yes, I have never listened to it. I am not a youth.
This is tying into Marvel's big War of the Realms crossover.
Yeah, it's tying into the big War of the Realms crossover. It is sort of a cross-country road trip story featuring a cavalcade of Marvel superheroes.
It's a wacky romp.
It is a wacky romp.
But with frost giants.
No, frost giants.
How's it tie into War of the Realms if there's not frost giants?
They're from Muspelheim.
Oh, well,
they're not frost giants.
There's fiery goblins.
You have to get it right.
I meant with Asgard stuff.
Well, I mean, one of the main characters is Baldur the Brave. So,
Who was dead and now he's back.
Yes, he is back. Yeah, they kind of hit it home pretty heavy that he is back from the dead and he doesn't understand the world.
Okay.
But yes, it is also Miles Morales. It is Thor's dog, Thori. It is Deathlocket, which is a female Deathlock.
Okay.
From Avengers Arena and Avengers Academy.
Okay, yeah.
And there's also...
Don't forget Simon Williams, the man called...
I was getting to Kate Bishop Williams.
I jumped in.
I still am a little burnt by Bendis turning Simon Williams into a pacifist.
Like, that became his thing.
It became his thing.
Still his thing here.
Still his thing here.
I mean, arguably, that's just continuity now. But it felt out of place when Bendis did it.
You can say about a lot of things Bendis does.
Yeah. I'm actually not completely opposed to it, but it is a little weird when a character who's really his only power is strength and, like, you know, punching people.
Yeah.
Is like, no more punching.
Yeah, if Xavier's a pacifist, that's fine.
Yeah. He only beats people up with his mind.
But Cyber Williams is made out of what kind of
ionic
energy?
Yeah. So now he debates his foes to death.
Yes.
All right, not to take away from the story. So they're road tripping. There's also one person,
and that is Sebastian Druid, which is Dr. Druid's son, who actually showed up in Secret Warriors.
Yeah. There's a running gag. Basically, Baldur is like, I'm going to recruit Hawkeye and Deathlaw. It's like, there's like a Norn or something.
A Norn who's like, predicts the future and warns Baldur that things have changed.
He's going to recruit Hawkeye and he gets Kate. He's going to recruit Doctor Strange and he gets Dr. Druid's wastrel son.
But the big deal is, they're traveling to... Is it Vegas? It might be Vegas. Oh, no, it's Oklahoma because that's where Asgard is. Basically, they're trying to save Freya's daughter.
Okay.
Which it's just Thor's sister, another lineage of Asgardians.
A little kid, right?
And or that is a big thing, even. And they're kind of trying to stay out of the fight, but, of course, where's the fun in that?
Was Baldur entrusted with the kid?
Yes. Okay. He's basically sworn his life to save this child.
Okay.
You know, being very Baldur.
Yep.
I actually thought it was a lot of fun. I actually really liked the art by Andre Lima Arroyo. I butchered that name.
Yep.
Sorry. But yes, it was just fun. There was some good action. And also I liked that all the characters got their sort of little moment in the sun, kind of giving showing where they were in their lives.
Uh-huh.
Sort of Kate Bishop as a PI, Simon Williams as a actor trying to, you know, get scripts done. And I don't know, it was just kind of fun just all around.
Dave?
Let's see. I'm also going to pick a number one this week. A writer I don't normally pick. This is from Brian Azzarello, who's certainly well known for 100 Bullets and Batman Damned and things like that. He has a new book from Boom Studios, of all places, that's like his weird, erotic, lesbian witch story, Faithless.
Yep.
I'm trying to think. What all has Brian Azzarello? He's done supernatural stuff before.
Moonshine.
Moonshine. What do you call it? Bootleg werewolf.
Werewolves.
Bootlegger werewolves in the 30s.
Which, by the way, bootlegger werewolves is a better name than moonshine.
Yeah, but I get why he did it.
Sure.
Because of the moon thing.
Yeah, it makes sense. I'm saying bootlegger werewolves is a great name.
Yep, it's true.
It's definitely a band name.
That should be like a a Blood Bowl. I feel like that could be a
bootlegger
team name.
Werewolves, yeah.
He did Crime with 100 Bullets. He's done some darker superhero stuff.
Did Hellblazer.
Hellblazer, yeah. So supernatural and crime and stuff is all mixed together. This is almost more of a character piece.
Yeah.
He works with such great artists.
The artist's so good.
This person's name is Maria Lovett.
Yeah.
Completely new to me. I thought it was great.
Yeah.
To me, comparable, if slightly just different, to Rizzo.
I agree. It's really good.
I feel like it's of the caliber. And so you got this girl who's, what would you say, late teens, 20?
20s. Definitely 20s.
She's 20s. And she's like hanging out at a coffee shop with her friends. It's a bit slice of lifey, but with that kind of dialogue that you expect from Azzarello, that's kind of, it's fascinating. It bounces you around in interesting ways. And she does magic, and her friends are kind of like either a little judgy for it or just kind of like blow it off. That is to say, it's like your friend maybe who's into magic, you're not seeing results, and they're joking about that. They're like, hey, how come we never see any of your spells work? And into her life in this one day in the cafe comes a kind of a beautiful, slightly punk chick with blue hair who she bumps into and who takes off her top right there to change out of the clothes in the store. And they have a little kind of sexy connection sort of going on. And then they go off and, like, end up... She's like, oh, let me buy you a drink for spilling that on you. And they kind of end up hanging out for the day and very clearly connecting. They go and shoot some pool. They talk. They see a weird, very strange news story that has a suicide that actually connects up with one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So there's weird stuff afoot that may be connected to magic. Their meeting may be connected to magic. And I don't know. Like, I just found it like a... And sometimes there's those books I'll start reading. There was even one or two this week where they kind of just... They're dense to start off with, and it's hard to get through the first few pages and get to figuring out who everyone is. Here, I immediately kind of felt like these are interesting characters. Just watching them talk and hang out, I was super into it right out of the gate. And part of that is Azzarello's dialogue, which doesn't always work for me. Sometimes it's a little, I don't want to say quite overthought, but he has his rhythms and patterns, maybe comparable only in that he has a voice and as narratively strong as David Mamet, the playwright.
Yeah.
So sometimes it works for me and sometimes it doesn't. This time it worked very well and I want to see what's going on. And I would probably tune in just for the art at this point. There is some naughty business in there. So if you are not into naughtiness, by no means go near it.
Yep.
But if you are, and if you might be okay with a little bit of horror, or maybe a lot of horror showing up during the course of that.
It's got a creepy final panel.
Yes, it does. It absolutely does. Anyway, but a powerful, or, oh, is this a miniseries?
I believe so.
A notable first issue, I think, of Faithless that's, like, I think, super readable. Randy, what you got?
All right, I'm doing a big old cheater pick, because this week the new edition of the Marvel Encyclopedia from DK Books came out. This is a big $40 hardcover that is an alphabetical... It's the Marvel Universe, basically.
Yep.
And while Marvel lost the ability to do Marvel Universe, I think when they lost Mark Gruenwald, essentially...
The official handbook of the Marvel Universe thing, yeah. You mean? Yeah.
These DK books are everything I liked when I was a kid. It's like every character, their real name, their first appearance, like height, weight, their powers, yep, abilities. They take a variety of like awesome art from different comics.
Yep.
And it is extensive. As I look at this page, page 110, you've got... one page focus on Dr. Doom, like giving a full page. And on the opposite page, you've got Doc Samson, Dr. Nemesis, Dr. Faustus, and Dr. Bong. So it's comprehensive.
Yes. Dr. Bong, for those who don't know, has a giant bell for a head, yes, and came out of Howard the Duck comics in the 70s. There is definitely no chance at all that creator Steve Englehart... Was it?
Steve Gerber.
Steve Gerber. The creator Steve Gerber had any part of the counterculture and possibly could have meant his name to mean anything else.
Right. There's also little pages in here like The Order, which was a short-lived Fraction team that I really liked.
Oh, man, yeah. Didn't Barry Kitson
Yeah.
the art for that?
There's a page on the Illuminati. There's a page on Infinity, like the event. So they go through and they give you a sense. If you're not keeping up with Marvel... Marvel Encyclopedia is just the way to sort of catch up on everything.
DK Books is an expert at those things.
It's super good.
And I think I actually narrowed down who that artist is on the cover. Is that Mark Giacchetto?
Could be Mark Giacchetto. We're not sure who the cover artist is, but it's got great cover art.
Message us if you know.
Also, it's better than the one from about a few years ago, which looked like it had Reed Richards punking Dr. Doom by like taking his stuff.
Oh, yeah, that was an amazing cover. Yeah. By the way, so while y'all were looking at this in the store like an hour or two ago, I was making some signs on the computer for the new comics, and it was painful for me because I wanted to go over and look at all the stuff y'all were looking at. I wanted to see the art that y'all did or didn't like.
Yep.
And I do... like, honestly, even the choices I don't like are usually at least interesting ones. Or it's like, oh, right, I forgot. This person tried out this look. It's just, like, the best browsing material ever.
Yeah, I own this from a few years ago, and I'm still super tempted to pick up this new updated one, because it's been a few years, there's enough changes that...
You know what? At some point, I've never run a Marvel RPG. I've done DC before.
Yeah.
At some point, I want to run a Marvel one. I may indulge myself and, like, buy this as research for that, so that if I need a quick reminder of, like, the wide scope of the universe.
Yeah. I feel like if you've got, like, kids or teenagers who are, like, wanting to get into Marvel, but can't figure out what comic to buy, like, this is the thing. You get them this. They will read through it. They'll love it. They'll maybe find some stuff they want to read. It's so good.
Yep. I think all of us have noted that, like, that's how a lot of kids get into stuff, is that those sort of encyclopedia-style intrigues, the power level chain, you know, differences, just the art and the sheer variety you get in something like this.
Yep.
All right.
My backup pick is The Life and Death of Toyo Harada number 2, which is a valiant book that I picked the first issue of as well. Toyo Harada is, like I said, he's their big bad from last time. He is a young Japanese boy. He's the most powerful psiot on the planet. He's got telekinetic and telepathic powers. And he was at Ground Zero of Hiroshima. He protected himself from a force field, watched his parents die, and then decided to basically create a utopia in the world. So it's flashing back with art by Butch Geiss, to his like first escape as a boy from Japan. He's like taking over these ships.
Which guys should probably draw all flashbacks.
Sure.
They look good.
He gets swept out to sea, and it's him facing the, you know, the fury of nature. Mm-hmm. And then 70 years later, we see him in Somalia. He has cooked up a what he's called the Foundation Zone, basically a post-scarcity society. He's trying to build his utopia. Huh. He's got a non-functioning super hospital, a USS supercarrier that he has taken under control. His group of people includes various other psyops. And then, and like this weird alien creature that wants him to give her like 100 pregnant women so she can experiment on them.
Oh,
and in
weird.
Exchange, she's giving him like cold fusion and quantum computing and all this stuff that's helping.
That's fascinatingly weird.
So it's like this strange, like, she's this crazy, weird alien thing.
Does it have anything to do with those aliens that were using like the dead in that other miniseries?
It might be, yeah.
That's fascinating. One of the things I like about Valiant, and I'm sometimes stepping at this from a very oblique angle outside, mm-hmm. I only occasionally read Valiant stuff, but I sometimes get that same vibe I did with early Marvel stuff where I'm like, oh, that's fascinatingly weird. I want to find out about what their aliens are like there and, you know, what their different factions are and all that.
This is a really cool, like, you know, politics and little forces moving against, you know, she's reaching out to Rising Spirit, which is the big, like, government organization that goes up against Harada, trying to play both sides. Mm-hmm. He's trying to outmaneuver her. There's all people in his organization. And he is undeniably a Dr. Doom-style bad guy. Like, he wants to take over the world. He just wants to do it to provide this sort of post-scarcity perfect society.
Mm-hmm.
And so you kind of root for him.
Right. That is an interesting line that they must be walking.
Yeah. It's really interesting. I'm digging it so far, and definitely curious to see where they go from here. Dave, your backup?
My backup is from Marvel, the new miniseries called Star Wars Age of Rebellion, Princess Leia. Age of Rebellion is the blanket title, and yep. They had just done, what, Age of the Republic?
Age of Republic,
where they did all those one-shots, and it'd be like Princess Amidala and General Grievous and Obi-Wan Kenobi from the era and right. all that stuff. So this will all be in the original trilogy era. They put out two this week. The other one was about Governor Tarkin, and this one is a spotlight on Princess Leia from the era. And it's written by Greg Pak. It's got who I've liked on a fair number of things. Oh, I didn't even notice until just now. I didn't realize it was drawn by Chris Sprouse, who yeah. I always like with Carl Story. And the this is set during the time period when they were Han Solo had been frozen in carbonite, and Leia and Lando and Chewie are all off searching for him, trying to figure out, you know, what they're gonna do. And it got off on a good foot with me. There's Princess Leia's like doing like a gear up scene, which is cool, but she kind of like can't. She needs to find some like ammo cartridges for that cool little thin blaster she's got, and Chewbacca's telling her where to find them, and she's kind of like nagging him a little bit about how messy their ship is, the Falcon. Lando is not there. He's off somewhere else right at the moment. We'll later join him. While she's wandering around, she stumbles past like somebody's sort of the bunk or the bedroom, and presumably it is Han Solo's, and she picks up the pillow, and in the sort of time-worn tradition of somebody missing somebody, sniffs the pillow like, oh, I'm missing you. And then she pulls back instantly as Chewbacca walks by, and she's like, this is your pillow, isn't it? And he's like, so yes, it was a funny scene. And but what this story is really is about is it has Bossk in it. It has Lando in it, who has gotten in over his head elsewhere. A sort of rescue with him, and which involves the explanation of where she got the Boosh bounty hunter costume for Return of the Jedi. Yeah. So which has always been a super cool design, yeah. even though it was only in that movie for like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And so you get to see more of it in this one. She kicks some butt in it. Sort of has to do some bluffing, ride on the reputation, try and stay undercover as to make things work. And it's just a good, rock-solid, fun issue. Completely standalone, like these are all going to be. So, yeah, if that sounds like it might be the kind of thing you like, it might be the kind of thing you like.
Yep. Nick?
I'm picking Detective Comics number 1001, and the Arkham Knight has invaded Gotham.
Now, Arkham Knight? You mean like the video game Arkham Knight?
Yes, I do mean the video game Arkham Knight.
But it can't be because the Red Hood is Arkham Knight.
Correct. Not
spoilers.
So, okay, so they're definitely taking away sort of Jason Todd part of Arkham Knight and doing a kind of new medieval sort of twist on it. And
the medieval twist was my favorite from... well, I can't simply say it.
Do the medieval twist. Chubby Checkers.
Well, I knew it was not Chuck Berry.
He's essentially thinks of himself as a hero who is trying to beat back the darkness that is kind of overcoming Gotham.
He's one of those delusional villains.
Yes, essentially. But he views Batman as a part of this darkness. Cause,
why? Because he shoots so many horses.
It's true. That is
pipe down,
true.
You. Nick don't want to hear your blather.
But this Arkham Knight has sort of recruited a giant army and is... Basically, things are...
Is it? Can I ask where the army is recruited from? Is it like...
We don't know, but they are sort of like knights in armor.
Oh, okay.
I was not kidding about
that. That sounds like he like got into the Order of Saint Dumas or something like that.
Yeah, it's got kind of that kind of feeling to it. There's also sort of this opening idea where the bats in Gotham City are dying.
I flipped through it just to... I was flipping through it, and I was like, oh, my God. I forgot how great this artist is.
This is actually Brad Walker.
Brad Walker. I thought it was Patrick Gleason or something like that.
Nope. This Peter Tomasi writing, but
it's
Brad Walker...
super good.
It is.
But yeah, there's, like, these really arresting pages of, like 100 bat corpses littered about and stuff, and they're like I don't want to say realistically rendered to make it feel like it's like super gross, but it does just like it like conveys a kind of startling image.
Oh yeah, 100 bat corpses is my favorite metal band.
That is pretty boss.
Especially all the bats down the child's slide.
Very
creepy. But there's also all the bats in like the bat cave dying as well. So there's obviously things afoot. Bruce consults with Man-Bat's wife, which another scientist's.
Right.
There's kind of that sort of element of him doing the detective stuff, mm-hmm. which is very cool.
So, Nick, you wrote Detective 1000.
Yeah.
Did Tomasi start a lead-in here, or is this basically the first part of it?
I mean, he did, like, a tease of Arkham Knight.
But you don't have to have read that. No. This is a jumping-on
point. This is a complete jumping-on point. You don't really need anything.
Since 1000 did sort of blow out of here, and we're not sure they're going to reprint it except for
the hardcover. Yeah, they seem like they might be stingy about it. Nick, I assume that during the course of this, even though we know something of the Arkham Knight's motive in this, we don't know who he is?
No, we do not know who he is.
Okay, so that is a sure mystery that they will probably be holding on to for a little bit.
And what actually he is going to do to Gotham to sort of fight back the darkness, because there's a couple of elements in here.
What if it was Kane?
Actually, here's a question.
Okay.
Do we know where Azrael is at this point? I mean, he was in Detective Comics previously, but if Azrael actually is the Arkham Knight, that would make sense.
Oh, man.
He could replace Batman at one point.
He could have recruited from his own order, literally.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
The imagery fits, and I kind of could see it working.
Yeah.
It's still he's like got that skewed anti-hero perspective.
Yeah.
All right, let's roll with it for now.
All right, Azrael is my guess.
I like that guess. I'm going to be sad when it's not him.
It's Man-Bat. Yeah.
But it was a great start, and Brad Walker does an amazing artwork on all the action sequences and just sort of that level of realism.
Yep.
The only other books on my pile are Batman number 68, which is one of, I think, the final issue of Batman's sort of nightmares.
Yeah.
This one is actually completely drawn by Amanda Connor, which I am...
Probably its own reason to get it.
Yeah, if you're an Amanda Connor fan, this is one to read. Cause
she doesn't
draw
it anymore either.
No, she does not.
I was flipping through this, and even though I know it's supposed to be a nightmare, it seems like it's like when Bruce and Clark are hanging out for like sort of a bachelor party hangout.
Yep.
And then their wives or their fiancés to be Lois and Catwoman. Are doing the same. But clearly there were time when they were like off on their own, and like is it literally all in his head? Because it seemed like it was a lot of that stuff were things that clearly really happened.
Yeah, he is like in some sort of machine and living out sort of these weird kind of things.
As a scarecrow kind
but
of
are
thing.
They are there anything in there that's clearly like distorted just in flipping through it and reading a few pages here and there?
No,
a lot of it seemed like this is literally just a kind of a way to do flashbacks and fill in some interesting things.
Because
it's like a bachelor party at the Fortress of Solitude.
But this actually didn't happen.
It didn't?
No.
Oh, interesting.
None of this is real.
Oh,
this
okay.
is sort of his...
They like I was noticing there was a fair amount of time spent with like Selina and Lois bonding, and they get drunk and they chill out and they have
Which
fun.
They did, did do it an issue.
Right, I remember them kind of bonding, so I just assumed that this was kind of a lost story about that, but that's not the case?
No, oh, it's weird. Not. This is sort of its own kind of thing. Ultimately, it'll be a reveal of why Batman is where he is and experiencing the things that he's experiencing. But yeah, it there are some great moments
weird.
Here. I love the stuff with Lois and Selina sort of ransacking the Fortress of Solitude, dealing with sort
did
of
they,
all
did
the
they
crazy.
Make Superman robot strip for them?
Yes.
Okay, just checking. I just want to make sure I read that right.
It was kind of awesome. Jeez. And then there was the Amazing Spider-Man number 19, which is the third part of the Hunted storyline that has Kraven the Hunter gathering all of the animal-themed characters from Spider-Man.
Including the Gibbon.
Including the Gibbon, which he may not have survived.
Rise, Gibbon, rise!
He may have died, Gibbon died. but there are some great moments in here. I actually really like Spencer's usage of, like, Taskmaster and Arcade. But this one is actually focused on sort of Spider-Man and also the Vulture, which I have not always been a huge Vulture fan. I'm also weirded out that Vulture is wearing kind of this bubble now over his head.
Protect him from germs, he's dead.
Oh, I see.
I mean, maybe
it is
so.
Weird. It does. It looks. It has a beak-like hook on the end, though, right? It looks like.
Yeah. It's okay. Definitely got kind of that beakish.
I'll accept it. Is it because that it was hard to buy that a guy who's 90 wouldn't fold under the first punch to his head?
I mean, that is completely possible.
No, it's so he can fly into orbit.
But Gerard Sandoval, who's
you know, there's still a hole in the bottom of that, right? What?
But yeah. I'm still enjoying the storyline and curious to see where it goes.
Yeah, this is... Nick, would it be fair to characterize this as, like, the more serious arc for Nick Spencer, that everything before was tinged with more humor and
yes.
This kind of
this
is a notable, more serious
this
direction?
This feels like it's got larger stakes.
Okay.
As opposed to sitting at home playing video games with Boomer.
With a supervillain, yeah. Does it still have some humor in it, though?
A little bit. Not as much as I was expecting from Spencer.
Kraven tells knock-knock jokes. This new thing.
Kraven does not tell knock-knock jokes.
Who is there? Your doom?
Who is there?
There does have
Spider.
A scene, does have an interesting scene with Kraven and Kraven's and his son. Which
I mean, the Kraven family lineage and all that stuff was one of the more kind of like potent and emotional qualities of the original story, and I would assume continues on in this, the family drama.
Dave, what else is on your stack?
Some of these I haven't read, so you jump in if you've read them. Let's see. There's a Web of Venom, The Cult of Carnage. This is a mini-series?
Yeah, like a series of one-shots, actually.
I was going to say, this is a series
of one-shots.
Oh,
right. Is this part of the same Web of Venom thing that had the Venom in Vietnam and stuff?
Yes.
So this is a continuation of the storyline that had this cult reveal that, like, worshipped the serial killer Carnage and had resurrected him. I haven't read it yet, but Donny Cates wrote a interesting first storyline with that. And
sounds like a bad idea to resurrect that guy.
It features characters such as...
But the way he wrote it, I could see it.
Okay.
His kind of new mythology building for the symbiotes, I've been kind of digging.
Yeah, but it also uses characters like John Jameson, which I thought was interesting.
AKA the Man-Wolf.
Yep.
So.
There's for the youth of today, there's a new Incredibles comic that's set after Incredibles 2. I haven't read this yet either, but I've actually liked a number of the Incredibles comics they've done in the past, so I'll probably check it out at some point.
Mm-hmm.
I know that their daughter, Violet, finds somebody else at school who may have powers as well.
Oh, wow.
Let's see. In Captain Marvel number 4, she bumps into Rogue.
Yeah, did you
read
that?
I did not. You were trying to stop me, and it was too late. I was already saying the words.
Yep.
Who's the artist in this? It's nice.
The artist is Carnero. I don't remember Carmen Carnero, and it's really good. Yeah,
I wanted to read it because, like, when I came in, it was when she had, like, lost her powers to Rogue way back when, and so I was curious to see where they went with it.
Yep, it's a big throwdown between her and Rogue, and she definitely deals with the we've kind of been cool with each other, but we don't really like each other.
Right, right. Let's see, Randy, did you read Fair Lady?
I did, and I thought Fair Lady is interesting. It is basically sort of a Magnum PI in a fantasy universe.
Yeah, kind of a more unusual fantasy universe, I'd say. But
it's a woman who is like a finder, basically, and she works with this big cat being that's like her enforcer.
And like Magnum, she's come home from the war and to become like an investigator.
And it's got really, really beautiful artwork. It's got a great premise. I feel like it's a new writer, and sometimes like it's I don't quite know what the world building is like.
Right,
but it's interesting.
I'm sort of in a similar place. I actually want to reread much, and even the town that it takes place largely in is fascinating because it seems to like be built inside the hollow left behind by like some Titanic being. Like imagine a like 500 foot tall giant in armor or whatever who had been collapsed long ago, and the armor was still there, and the town built around it. Let's see. There's a new indie book called Cold Blood Samurai.
Yep.
Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah. This one was interesting because when I was making the sign for it, I saw that its influences were Usagi Yojimbo, Akira Kurosawa, but also it's based on like a poem by Homer, aka the Odyssey and the Iliad, but like a some other poem he wrote about which I don't know a lot. I didn't get around to reading this one, but it looked like. Like, the art in it was so beautiful. Like, I was just, like, entranced by the artwork in it. It has this slightly, I don't know, Usagi or Ninja Turtles-y look to it.
Okay.
But there's a sort of more noir, more realistic look to it as well. Like, I don't know, I feel like anybody who kind of has an interest in sort of the feudal Japan should just go ahead and pick it up, even though it's weird and has lizard men and, like, they're sword fighting crabs and stuff too.
This all sounds good.
Yes. And the last thing I wanted to mention, Invaders number 4. This is the one I mentioned before. It has some flashback stuff with Xavier in it where Namor turned to him for help. The short version is it seems like Xavier's like an error he made during his kind of more arrogant youth, which kind of ties into how they portrayed him in X-Men First Class movies.
Yeah.
May be somewhat responsible for Namor's mood swings, I guess I would say, and PTSD. I did not love it, but I also didn't hate it, and there's still a lot to like in this issue. There were several scenes that I was like, oh man, that was a great idea. So I'm still on the fence as to how this will ultimately play out, still liking it, but I kind of wish Xavier hadn't gotten something that I felt like tarnished him again.
Is this one of those things where it's like every time Namor does something, Xavier's like, oh wait, no, this now. He was like, and now you wear water wings.
No, it's more like he might not be the trained therapist he thinks he is.
Ah, yes.
What else you got, Randy?
All right. So Symbiote Spider-Man number 1, which is a miniseries that was written by Peter David, art by Greg Land. It is a flashback to when Peter had just come back from Secret Wars. He is dating the Black Cat. He's wearing the black costume, not knowing it is Venom. And he's facing off with Mysterio, who's going through his own kind of stuff. This was interesting. Peter David has sort of a wacky sense of humor, which is either going to be your thing or not. But he also is doing some sort of darker storytelling. Mysterio actually kills someone during a bank robbery and is kind of dealing with that.
Those are both typical of like Peter David, weirdly, that he will go out and kind of do the tongue-in-cheek stuff, and then he will go kind of real serious at times.
Yeah. I really liked his take on Felicia Hardy. I really liked the Spider-Man-Black Cat relationship, so it was kind of nice to see that referenced. And this was an era I enjoyed, so it's an interesting first issue. Winter Soldier, the miniseries, comes to a finale. It comes to an ending. Been really enjoying that. Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man number 5 is one of these serious stories where serious things are happening. It is a weird fit for Tom Taylor, and it was not my favorite issue of the run, but I think it's probably going to be one of these. Sometimes people like the very serious issue kind of things.
Right.
Savage Sword of Conan number 4 is another Conan being a badass. Pretty fun. Age of Conan Elite number 2 has more swashbuckling on the seas. And Hawkman 11 is the, I think, the penultimate issue of this run we've been enjoying, where it's like Hawkman facing off with the demons of his past, literally. And he like brings in all the various Hawkmen of throughout time to fight them off.
Hawk throwdown.
Yeah, there's a big Hawk throwdown.
Yep. Swoop, my pretties. I hope he says that.
Sure.
That would definitely make it great.
Yeah, yeah.
Not Brian Hitch's amazing artwork, but Swoop, my pretties.
Okay, we'll be back in just a second to talk about Shazam.
Talking about comics, movies, and fame. They even talk about board games. No week is the same.
Okay, so we're going to do... We all saw Shazam. We're going to do a spoiler review of that. Before we get to that, and I will give you a spoiler warning, Nick and I were going to talk about Santa Clarita Diet Season 3, so we're probably going to spoil that. So we watched season 3.
Yes.
How many episodes in the show?
10 episodes.
Okay. Yep.
I don't think we've ever talked about this show.
Have we
before.
Not, really?
I don't think we have.
Okay.
And it's one of those weird ones where when it originally came out, I only watched the first couple of episodes, and I was like, huh, that's really weird. I don't know if I can enjoy watching this.
Yeah.
And then I randomly came back to it, and it's probably one of my favorite shows.
It's really, I forget how good it is, and then I turn it on and I watch like all of it in one day.
Yeah.
It's half hour episodes, which I love.
Yes.
The basic premise is that Drew Barrymore, a suburban housewife, she's married to Timothy Oliphant.
Yep.
They're realtors, or as they said.
That's Timothy Oliphant?
Yeah, that's the front of the season. Realtors.
Yes.
They kept pronouncing it weird.
Yep.
And they have a daughter who's a teenager, and basically Drew Barrymore becomes a zombie.
Yep.
Not like a rah-rah brain zombie, she like becomes the pure id, and she does have to start eating people. And as we left off last season, they had found what they called their lobster tank of neo-Nazis, where she would just occasionally grab one, bring it to the kill room, and eat him.
Yep.
I love this dark sense of humor.
This gets spoiled this season very early, and so she's gotta find a new food supply.
Yes.
Her daughter went eco-terrorist and blew up a fracking site.
Yep,
and the FBI is looking into her and her friend.
Are there zombies in this world?
Yes. Well, there are other zombies because you know she's bitten one, and they also discover this sort of this Serbian vampire or zombie hunting order.
Yes.
Is it like super comedic?
It's very comedic.
Yeah.
But it has
it's dark humor.
Yeah, it's dark humor.
Okay. Any seriousness?
Dealing with like serious elements of like what makes a family.
Yeah, right. I feel like there had to be marriage stuff in there.
Yeah, the relationship stuff. It's actually, their marriage is really their marriage.
Well, yeah,
really
I mean, one of the big things about this season is whether or not Timothy Oliphant wants to become a zombie.
Yeah, she's like she gets the idea of I'm going to be immortal and I don't want to be alone and I want to turn him into a zombie.
And he's like, I don't know if I can
be a zombie. Yeah.
That's fantastic. A case of a commitment phobia discussed via the metaphor of zombies.
Yeah. Well, it's also Timothy Oliphant. I mean, I just view him as justified, and he is such like this kind of force of nature a la the Punisher in that.
And so seeing him be this goof.
And then, yeah, he is like the ultimate dad.
He can do
goof.
Comedy.
Oh, yeah. He's great at it.
That's awesome.
And he plays so well off of Drew Barrymore.
There's
and
also... There's a great guest cast. I mean, there's so many good people in short and little roles.
I love the head that was Nathan Fillion, but because...
He's now Alan Tudyk.
He's Alan Tudyk. Because his face is like melted because he didn't get a serum that stops
the his face decomposed and his and a part of his voice box dropped out, and so now they just... And it works. Like, they just... Yeah.
And Alan Tudyk is great as it.
Yep.
But, yeah, it's got a great rest of the cast. Natalie Morales plays, cop who lives next door.
The two scientists from Better Off Ted play roommates, which was a great little nod.
It was a great nod.
There's a lot of little... Oh, and Goran Vižnik as, like, this scientist Serbian who wants to, like, use zombie blood for an age cure. Like, there's some really, really weird stories, but... It all works really well.
You know what this reminds me of? Not literally like it, but a little bit of the weirdness of Chew.
Yeah.
Where the strangeness is like a vehicle for stories, but it's like no one's part of the strangeness is like what they focus on.
Right.
Like they...
I still want to know what the stupid spider...
Mr. Ball Legs?
Mr. Ball Legs is. Yeah.
Me too. What?
Who's the guy who's the... I always forget his name now. The big guy. He played Willem in Mallrats. Ethan Suplee.
Oh, yeah.
Ethan Suplee's great in this.
Yeah. I forgot that was him from Mallrats. Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
For me, I feel like zombie things are kind of, I mean, not to be...
Played out.
Dead. For me.
This resurrected some hope?
A little bit. I mean, this is sort of a play on zombies that I don't feel like we've ever seen before.
Sure.
I mean, yes, it's dealing with some of the usual trappings of, like, you know, murdering and stuff, but it's not one note.
It's, right, it's by no means another survivalist story.
Exactly.
Well, except it's about the survivalism of a marriage.
Yeah, it's true. But it's kind of on a smaller scale, while dealing with also the possibility of a zombie outbreak. It's sort of doing...
Now, what's going to happen to Daryl this season, do you think?
Different show.
Oh.
But I want to say, I really like iZombie, and this feels of a piece with that.
I was going to mention that. It does feel like that.
For quirky zombie fans.
Yeah, quirky zombie fans.
Or for fans of zombie quirk. You don't have to be quirky yourself. Also, you could be, but you don't have to be.
You could be a serious person who likes quirky zombies.
Serious Dave, quirky zombies.
I just think it's a good show to laugh at. It's really funny.
Yeah. Yeah, I cracked up several times. It's.
I have this feeling I might actually like this show, and I might need to check it out.
You should give it a go to watch. All right. We're going to do a spoiler review for Shazam. So if you have not seen Shazam, stop listening now, and Yojo and all that. If you have seen Shazam, we're going to talk about it. So we all saw it.
Yes.
And I think you guys really, really liked it, and I kind of liked it.
When I was watching it, I at first was in the kind of liked it stage. I was not quite won over for even like the first 20, maybe 30 minutes. At a certain point, and maybe it was part of actually just the shot in the arm of getting to Zachary Levi,
yeah.
Started getting me more interested in it. And also sort of seeing where the stuff they set up was going.
Yeah.
But by the end of it, I was actually quite a bit on board it. I don't know quite where it'll land in the sort of DC movie pantheon for me, but I really liked it by the end. I was having a very good time with it, and it even won me over on the Geoff Johns stuff a little bit that I know inspired it.
Yeah, I when they got to the final, like, 20, 30 minutes, when they got the Super Family,
yeah,
that's when I thought everything paid off, and I actually really liked that last bit, but I wanted them to get there a lot faster. I thought that they spent too much time on Billy learning to be a hero. They spent way too much time on Savannah, who I did not find interesting at all.
Mm-hmm. I think that's going to have a larger payoff in the next movie, because it's going to be a sort of, you see the villain journey from becoming imbued with the seven deadly sins to the sort of super scientist that we will ultimately get. I don't think they're going to ignore who Savannah actually is. It's just a different road.
I kind of liked seeing, ultimately, I like sort of liked seeing the different take on him. I was struggling with it for a little while, but I ended up at least somewhat on board it, and I thought that, what's his name, Mark Strong?
Yeah, Mark Strong.
Mark Strong, I thought, was interesting to, enjoyable to watch throughout. A little bit stock villain at times, but his motivations were unusual for a bad guy.
I also like seeing John Glover again.
I always liked John Glover.
Yeah, me too. I feel like I would have liked more of him, but I liked what they did with him.
Yeah.
Jarek, our store friend, Jarek was talking about this with me last night, and he said that's the fourth DC outing for him.
Yeah, he was Lex's dad. He was...
He was, what do you call it, in Batman and Robin? He was the guy who created Bane.
Oh, really?
Yeah, what's his name? He's from Swamp Thing Comics, not Arcane. Or is he?
He might have been
Anton Arcane. If not, he was one of those other dudes from Swamp Thing. Yeah, I think he was, though. And then he was the voice of the Riddler on Batman the Animated Series, the first voice.
Oh, wow. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
That's cool.
That guy's been on a journey. He's always fun to see around. For those who don't know, he went with this weird thing where he gets this magical imbuement in his eye.
Well, it's like
where
this
he can
magic
see
eye
magic.
It's in the Rock of Eternity, sort of.
Right.
It's like this relic that is imbued with the seven deadly sins.
You can tell by the way that Geoff Johns, that this was very based on his story, which I read afterwards, and I was like, oh, the movie all but is an adaptation of it, just with some different villainy stuff. But he was reinventing it the same way he reinvented the Green Lantern Corps. So it was, you know, that Wizard Council and all that stuff would end up having an important role. We just didn't know what it was at first.
How did you feel about Jimon Hounsou as the wizard?
Really liked.
I did too.
I knew I was going to like him. No, he was fun.
But see, I need Goofy and Shazam.
I do think that even the original comic strips were definitely somewhat tongue in cheek.
Yeah.
Not, but it was an era before the word camp had been invented, mm-hmm. and they weren't quite campy. They sort of played it straight face, but there was clearly some of their ridiculousness, like including Talkie Tawny,
yep.
the civilized tiger. And Mr. Mind,
yep. which I was,
who I really love the voice that he had in his.
I unabashedly love that they did Mr. Mind. Like, they did not shy away from it at all.
No.
Well, when we were originally see him in his cage,
if nothing else,
that's great.
Yeah, that's a nice little nod. But then it looks like they are going to run with it.
I think my issues are largely that I really liked. First of all, I like Zachary Levi a lot as Shazam. I think he's the big silly point.
Yeah. Sure, he's
and
the glue.
The family, they did a great job with the younger girl. What's the younger girl's name? Is it Ruby?
Gosh.
I think that's right.
Something like that. I don't remember her name. But
I don't know the name.
She's great. And when she gets her speed powers, like she was one of my favorite characters.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Freddie Freeman, they did a great job with. I thought they could have developed the other two boys better, but I liked them in their superhero versions.
Randy, do you know? Well, I mean, you've read at least the first issues of the new one
yeah,
where they
yeah.
have those kids
yeah,
in it.
Yeah,
like yeah, I had not realized that those kids are almost exactly out of Johns's run.
Yeah.
And I read Johns's run from like I guess Rebirth. It was serialized in Justice League,
mm-hmm.
not New 52, right?
No, it wasn't New 52.
It wasn't New 52.
Man, so that was like 8 or 9 years ago or something like that. It was fascinating to me that he had built all that stuff up. Like those characters are might as well be Johns's characters. They did, I think, write them more compellingly in the movie, and the actors brought something extra to the role. But the raw stuff did come from him. Same with all the costumes and all that stuff.
Yeah. The actor playing Freddie Freeman.
Well, Gary Frank, I mean, who designed them.
Yeah.
For the
actor playing Freddie Freeman is great. The kid.
Yeah.
And his rapport with Zachary Levi definitely feels like Tom Hanks and whoever that kid
was from Big, yeah.
From Big.
They overtly tipped the hat to Big.
With the keyboard, which was great.
Yep.
I noticed that the audience I saw it with, which was a pretty filled audience, did not notice that.
I noticed that too.
They were kind of like, huh. Because they walk on the big piano thing like in Big briefly during a fight scene.
Yep.
And
I think Big has been a little bit lost in because they're doing Little or whatever that one is.
That
is a gender flipped, race blind version of Big.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people don't know that because it seems like Big has been kind of lost even though it's a Tom Hanks classic.
Right. Yeah. It is like arguably one of his very best movies.
Yeah. But yeah, I definitely the nod there was kind of fun. I think my biggest issue with this was the villain. And I think that's a problem with a lot of superhero movies. But I like Mark Strong, but I feel like this was a weird take on Savannah. And I feel like his powers were ill-defined. I also think you've got the seven deadly sins, and all they are is demons that eat people. They're all demons that eat people. Like, I want a little more of the, like...
Did you want lust to, like, violate people?
No, I was worried about that, actually. but I wanted to have a little director.
Yeah. I thought...
What was this director?
It's a horror director. He actually did a movie called, like, Lights Out, which I don't know if you...
Yeah, I thought Lights Out was a good...
Yeah.
It's another one of those from Blumhouse, I think Blumhouse, where I was like, good teen horror movie.
Yeah,
They've got, like, three or four that I think are good teen horror movies.
Yeah, I listened to an interview with him yesterday, and, like, he's one of those guys that came from doing a short.
So wait a second. The last two fun superhero movies they did were from, like, Blumhouse horror movies, James Wan, the Big Gun, and this guy?
And these guys are gonna helm this superhero, because he's already, I think,
would not
signed
have guessed
for
it.
Shazam 2, and I know James Wan is gonna do Aquaman 2.
Aquatical
and,
Man.
Like, at least produce the Trench movie that they're...
What?
That's a weird
one.
That's weird.
Yeah, I don't think they should do that.
I am excited.
Although if like the lead was Dolphin or somebody like that, I'd be
point,
like,
eh. I can come up with a cool story concept and
you could, but they should. They've got so many icons to mess around with. I don't think you do the deep dive into the Trench.
So,
yet.
I really want to see. One of the things I really liked about Shazam was that it's set in the DC universe.
Yeah,
I like that. I like they made reference to Superman and Batman. I like that Freddie Freeman's a fanboy.
Yeah,
right. There's a Batarang in it.
One of my favorite things is at the end is that animated sequence where they're showing like her racing the Flash.
Oh, right.
And
the one
like,
that looks like it's animated, like, by high school artwork.
And then they show, like, you know, Aquaman getting Instagram likes. And like, that's the movie I wanted to see. When we got to the end, and we see how these characters interact with the DC Universe, that's why I'm excited for a sequel. Like, I want to see that.
Yeah, I could see that.
And I love the little nod having Superman at the end. I like the nods. But I feel like...
It was fun. Like, I didn't know quite how they were going to deliver on that moment, which otherwise felt like it was going to be sort of a predictable bully comeuppance.
Yeah.
And they came up with something that was really pretty fun.
Yeah. As origin stories go, though, it never dragged for me.
You know what it reminded me of, in a weird way? It's weird to say, but Iron Man.
Yeah.
Where I think they felt like they needed to establish some credibility, a human credible vibe, before they could get to the crazy superhero stuff. Not maybe as much as Iron Man, and I don't think as well written or ad-libbed or whatever as Iron Man. I felt sometimes the script could have maybe used a bit of punching up, but by and large, I was having a really good time by the end.
I loved the scene where they're in the convenience store and he gives the gun back and he's like, okay, you can shoot me. Let's see.
Yeah, like
there was some fun stuff. I felt like they did too much of that. Like the trailer had the amount I wanted of him being goofy Shazam. And instead, there was like 20, 30 minutes of the movie of that.
At this, you have to realize, I mean, you just kind of have to buy into the, this is a kid who's right. like, I'm just for, and, just want to try stuff out.
This is a movie that's a comedic take on that. Like, yeah. Big is a comedic movie, but has some serious stuff about him being a kid, too.
And I actually thought the serious part of this was sort of the foster family and sort of building, Billy finding his mother.
It was actually,
and things
one
like
of the
that.
Things I liked best about it was. Realizing that, like, I didn't think I wanted it, and I ended up liking it. It ended up being a good surprise.
Yeah.
I did not... I was like, oh, you know, part of the reason I'm not liking the new series is because Shazam, although I've got... He's got some fun friends and allies and Takitani and all that, is a solo character to me. He's a solo character with a fun supporting cast, just like Flash on the TV show. Mm-hmm. But this ended up being like, they're like, oh, no, it's a very important thing, this supporting cast, the most important thing in it, ultimately. And in an interesting way, I thought, like, where I, in the end, I was like, I want to see more of these characters.
It's an interesting update on the Marvel family, which has always been part of the of that of those characters.
Yeah, I was like, okay, I don't really want to see Hoppy and Uncle Marvel or whatever, Dunkle Dudley or whatever.
That's why I like the updated
version. So, yeah, I was like, that was pretty clever. But you found a way to update an idea that would otherwise... Seems like it's gone, completely dated.
I want Takitani.
Well, I think
I would like Takitani.
I think we will get that. It was touched upon in John's miniseries or serialized version.
They did have a tiger in this. It was a stuffed tiger that Zachary Levi gave to a little.
There
kid.
Is 100%. They even mentioned the realms or whatever that John's has been doing stuff with.
Well, and they actually show the like a room full of doors that opened up.
The Crocodile Men.
And they did the Crocodile Men from the Monster Men, which I thought was. Fantastic.
Yeah, it's...
The Crocodile Gangsters.
There is some fun stuff definitely at work in this, and definitely potential for a follow-up.
Yeah, I'm excited about the sequel. I think I was not as in love with it as everyone else is, but I'm glad people are enjoying it. I mostly... I feel like it took too long to get going, but once it got there, I was pretty happy with the destination. So.
Yeah, I might even agree with that it took a little long to get going. Yeah. I think it's another one of those movies that I expect I will like a little bit more in retrospect, knowing where it's headed.
All right, that's it for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. Until that time,
Yo Joe!
Thanks for listening. If you like the show, do us a favor and spread the word to your friends. Or give us a quick 5-star rating and review on iTunes to help us grow our audience. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or at www.roguesgallerytx.com. We'll be back next week.